Welcome to the puppet show. Life in tatters, blood on the floor. Voices scream, nothing matters. Death screams for more. Confusion by the box load dumped on everyone. Deafened by the noise, you never see us come. It's just another show. Yeah, welcome to the puppet show. Strings yanked every day. Listen to the puppet leader, he'll show you how to play. When his string is yanked, everybody do the same. Throw your hands above your head, come on. It's just a game. When they open his mouth, your mouth opens too. And when they leave him in a pile, that means die on cue. But most often, the shifty puppeteer, the only one you see, listens to your questions. On your life he'll try to feed. So you never saw us coming. But one day you will learn. When the puppet's strings are gone, and his soul we finally burn, we turn our eyes to you. We lust to have you see the face of true damnation, and how your screams can be. You think this sounds terrible? You think that sounds cruel? Don't look at me. You let me rule. You had a way out, but you bought the fake. So now I'm here, your soul to take. Still confused, let me be clear. Your eternal death lies in a full-length mirror. A full-length mirror. Ah, youth. Yeah, so I hope you can hear this now. I'm so sorry. I started this whole thing up, and I had the mute button on, which means that you didn't hear. I was really that lathered up, though. Probably it's good that the public didn't hear it, because, you know, I was describing having to be treated. I mean, there's some things that, you know, a lot of things are forming. I can maintain, you know, a front of civility and decorum and, you know, awareness of, you know, social whatever norms. But then that doesn't mean there isn't a process going on. You know what I mean? That's all surface. What I've been dealing with, and I guess what I've... the treatment that I'm receiving now is for PTSD from the hospital, believe it or not, and, you know, as per the diagnosis. Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure there are people who would like me to forget everything I saw, and I haven't told you even 10% of it or even 5%. I was trying to write a book and then I got blocked. And those of you who have been supporting my writing, thank you. I'm Substack, Zeph Daniel. This book is, it's really like, right now it's really touch and go. Every time I try to get back into it, some horrible thing happens. And it's just a big block. But anyway, regarding the, a lot of people don't deal with, PTSD. I'm familiar with it so well because of, from my youth, my teenage years through leaving Los Angeles, I was, abused mentally and physically and, set up for murder and things like that, which I never really processed that a friend would want to murder, that we went to school with or could turn into your own murderer. But social pressures being what they are, and now you see everything I talked about came true. In fact, I think I've got more detail and more understanding of this thing that's going on right now than pretty much anyone else I've heard. And the only reason for that is because I was not treated, not understanding what had happened. Where things, for example, I was at my directing debut. I thought I was directing films. I thought I was a writer, and then I was got a chance to direct this Angel's Tide, and that would be my first attempt, and really seemed like a good fit, and it got ruined, destroyed, and I never really dealt with that. By other people. And then I just begged God to kill me. To just please don't put me here. But we held on, and we met the Lord at that point because it was that or suicide. Is that or a bullet to the head? And then left LA and came to New Mexico. And at first it was kind of a relief, but I have to admit, I don't think I was really dealing with what happened. If I look back on it, I would say it's kind of like being a refugee. And it went bad. The people just thought they had this lever on me that I was crazy. My brain didn't work right. I needed help. I need treatment. I need people to look after me. I'm not well. I'm not functional. And all those things, I would just say, they're afraid of anyone being different because I'm very different when you deal with me. The first thing they thought in the hospital, which is now what I don't know how long it's going to take to deal with that. But they decided that I had brain damage from something, and they wanted to do an MRI of my brain because of the way I act, because of what I say, because I don't respond like other people. And so therefore there's something wrong with me. That's their attitude. And when they tied me down in the middle of the night onto an MRI, those big round machines, they stick your head in there and you can't get out. If you're claustrophobic, you know, you're in trouble. But sometimes they put you in the other way. It depends what they're looking at. But now they want to look at my head, so my head had to go into that thing. And I woke up, and I started, apparently I was under anesthesia. I didn't agree to this. And they, I started hitting the machine, pounding on it, and I wrecked the experiment. And then the proof that it was a setup, that it was designed to do harm, is that when I got back to my room, they said, oh, this is to Trish, his brain is fine, he doesn't need an MRI. We never completed it. They did this at 2 a.m. Is that normal? And, you know, they do everything just shy of, you know, leaving a trail that could, you know, involve legal action. So, you know, this was triggered me into silence and eating it. I ate it because I wanted out of there. And if I started complaining about that, man, I would have been a quick, you know, wheelchair roll over to psychiatric. And, you know, which I, you know, and God knows what happens after that. You know what I mean? I've known people that actually jumped off buildings once they got into psychiatric. So, and I don't really understand, you know, I mean, I would give to deal with this PTSD thing, I would give the nurses, because they're all hostile, save for maybe, you know, a couple here and there, but the majority. So I would give them nicknames and belittle them and perhaps insult them a little bit. Or just act in a certain way so that they you know, once you get a nickname, once you get, you know, some sarcasm, it keeps them at bay, kind of. You know what I mean? They're not used to that. They're used to you just saying okay, and then they do whatever they want to you. I mean, at this point, I'm having a little orange, beautiful orange. God made the orange just exactly the right size for my appetite. So this is that and many other things. My medication was jacked with, where they put two medications together in my IV that caused my skin to break out everywhere. And then they had to put me on steroids to get rid of it. But it was the nurse that did it. And he was like a super gay nurse. He had like pink tennis shoes and, you know, the whole bit, kind of flamer. And I was nice to him. I said, I thought we were friends. Like, hey, too, Brute. Because, I mean, you know me. I know everything going on. Like you don't have to spell it out. So I knew he did it. And then my doctor didn't seem too concerned, and he just said, well, steroids, you know, nothing could be worse for my heart or my situation. And it did eventually clear up my skin rash that broke out everywhere, but it was like right after, you know, he mixed two different kinds of like Benadryl type things, you know, they were like, but they caused a reaction, which, and then I never saw him again. The guy disappeared. You know, but so all these attempts on my life, really, and my sanity, were calculated. And I just can't believe that they should have been stopped by the sarcasm of me and by the wit and snarkiness and attitude You know, I mean, I didn't have anything, so all I got left is my attitude, right? I didn't have a sword. But then it got real serious down in surgery, where they kept a mask on me, told Trish to go home. I was just about on the verge of a cardiac arrest and death when I came out of the surgery because they wouldn't let me breathe air. And then finally they took the mask off right at the last second, and I was able to catch a breath before I passed out from a lack of oxygen, lack of air. And the nurse did this, big time satanic, you know, what was her name? Reb or something, some kind of weird Reb. Yeah, at Presbyterian Hospital, some kind of murderer, you know, some kind of evil witch. But it doesn't matter. What matters is that all this and many more incidents, you know, kept occurring. And I could hear them talking about me in the hallway, where this one, and all these male nurses were fat and gay, you know. And it just, you just got this vibe of, it's a godless kind of, what is it, the Antifa vibe almost. Anyway, they're in the hallway, and I hear him saying, "Zeph is violent, so watch out. Zeph is violent." It's like, why? Because I talk back? Because I don't want the fucking mask on my head? Because I have a preference? That's your problem? And you know, just kind of sticking with this issue, not going back to my own past, which, you know, people never recover, ever. That's what happened to my daughter. She never recovered. So she killed herself and was happy to go off into death's arms because she couldn't, you know, exist. Because people made it hard for her. They teased her about her weight. They gaslit her. Yeah, people are mean. People are too mean in this world for, you know, the only comfort she found was in abusers. And when it came time to become an adult and be serious, her life had no choices. Except I guess she could become a nun. But anyway, she tried desperately to deal with it. She'd been a cutter, you know, and cut her wrists and arms. And she'd been, you know, a number of things. And when she was 16, she goes, "I can't wait to die. I can't wait to die." I understand there's a number of other 16-year-olds out there with the same sentiment. But we're all dealing with the same thing, aren't we? Abuse. Real abuse. And we don't say anything because I haven't said anything. I thought I could deal with it in the novel, but I got stuck there, and I'll come out of it. Just hang with me at Substack. It's gonna grow. It's just there's a stoppage right now. There's a block, and I think so I'm, you know, being treated for, you know, the person that is
homeopathic.
The homeopathic doctor that's in another country is treating me, and what she had picked up on right away was you need to deal with the PTSD from the hospital. You haven't dealt with that yet. Yeah. And to be honest with you, folks, I haven't touched it. I think I used the Zeph report as a little bit of an escape from dealing with it, as if I was all put together. But, I mean, if I was really well put together, and I would tell you exactly what I really think, I'd be labeled a paranoid schizophrenic. You know, just if I'm not already. So here we go. You know, and they don't understand. And they don't want to. They're looking for vectors of abuse. And because I was the nail that was sticking up, they thought they'd hammer me down. So it was basically just abuse by, you know, and PTSD imposed upon my psyche and my soul by the hospital. And I'm actually getting medication for that. It's not, you know, it's homeopathics. It's not, you know, not drugs. But I've had to go another way with my treatment because I need healing. I can't get healing from the AMA. I can't get healing from allopathic doctors. I can't get healing from the hospital. I can't get healing from the cardiologist. I can't get healing from anyone except people that are healers, none of which are in the medical field, because they're all separated. In other words, they don't communicate with each other. Any good healer will want to, you know, will understand the body as one organism. You know, the heart's up there, the brain, other organ, you know, goes kind of from the top down, needs to be healed. Not this over here and then that over there, and then we'll deal with the prostate over there and then the stomach over here. That's not healing. That's Frankenstein shit. Now, yeah, you know, while you're at it, put a few transplants in. Frankenstein. And, you know, I wish I maybe didn't go through that surgery. Maybe they could have gotten rid of the infection another way. I don't know. But I'm, you know, the proof of the PTSD is the fact that I am honest. I have fantasized about killing that nurse, you know, and the cardiologist. And I don't want to have that. You know what I mean? I'm a peaceful person. I've never been violent with anyone. But what was that back there? It's hard enough to fight off an infection, let alone fight them off. So they got to me. And they, you know, so in my youth, I'd been destroyed. I was destroyed as a teenager. And then my career was destroyed. My screenwriting was destroyed. My, you know, and it all is because of my personality, all because of the way I am or the way God made me or the responses or just the general, I guess I just am like the red flag they wave at the bull. Yeah, you wave the red flag at the bull charges. I guess that's what to them, that's what I am. And, you know, they won't be happy until I'm, you know, either, you know, dead. Dead is too easy, though. Tortured and then dead. And make it look like it's my fault. So, you know, and I didn't talk about any of this stuff because I didn't want to sound like a paranoid lunatic, but now it's been picked up by, and I didn't even mention it to the practitioner. She said it because, you know, she's intuitive. You know, she picked it up, and then Trish burst into tears, yeah. And I'm not okay, in addition to everything else. I'm not saying I'm like a victim, you know, totally. I'm working on getting my body back, my strengthen my legs so I can walk and things like that. I'm trying to, but this is something that needs to be dealt with too. I need to do the impossible. I know people all over the place that say, you know, yeah, they talk about forgiveness and Jesus and all that, and I've been talking about it myself. But, you know, here I am, you know, in this condition. Now, time is somewhat of a healer, in that that nurse and that anesthesiologist, they tend to fade into the background a little more, but they tried to murder me. They attempted murder with the coming out of the anesthetic to block off the air. And the nurse, I could see through the mask, she knew what she was doing. She did it on purpose. It's attempted murder. And she's never going to see a day in jail. But she wouldn't have gotten in trouble, is my point. So why not? Well, why would they target you, Mr. Paranoid? Because I'm unique. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure that out, does it? And no matter how much I try to conform or act like everybody else, the more I try to blend in and get under the radar, the worse it gets. You're not getting under any radar. They're not gonna give me a pass in there. At first I was, you know, gentle. I wasn't snarky and, you know, attitude and all that. I did that as a defense to survive. You know, death is violent. You know, that's what the, if you talk back to them or ask them about your medication or you have a question about something, you're now violent or delusional. Biggest bunch of idiots I've ever seen. Now, I'm amazed that they even know what to do with a fever or a cold or, to me, it just looks like they want to kill. So anyway, that was, so I was at the hospital here in Santa Fe, then transferred to, and then I had to leave because of a similar situation. A gang stalking in the hospital at the nurse's station in front of my room. So I had to leave. I tried to write an AMA thing, and they discharged me because they realized that I was under stress, and I said I was not in my right mind with all the drugs and my infection. I was, you know, hallucinating and seeing things, and I just wandered out of the hospital, and then I checked myself back in to another one. So it's not, you know, there was no way I was trying to get out of medical treatment. I was trying to get away from abuse. And I tried to explain it, and then they tried to drop it and act like nothing happened, and the insurance and everybody was fine with it. You know, they understood, you know, they listed me leaving there as a discharge. Then I went to this one locally here. Then they transferred me down to Albuquerque, and that's where all the fun began. Weird. How do you let it go? Well, saying I forgive you doesn't work. So we can scratch that off the list. So what's next? Yeah, you know, I volunteering to mow that murdering nurse's yard, you know, just as a way of forgiveness. What? I don't think that would do anything except flare it up again. Begging Jesus to take it off of me. Well, I've done that. Please. And it's like, well, if I take that off of you, I might as well take your whole personality off and your entire history. And, you know, wipe the slate clean from your birth. because it's all been abuse. It's never been, you know, there's, it's never been normal. It's never been kind. It's never been loving. It's always been hateful. And it's always been the same contention. You're not like the others. Therefore, fuck you, die. And I mean, no matter how many games we play around the subject, that's really what the subject is. So then I say, well, what is the earth? So what is, I know this is a heavy, this is probably, you know, not even fit for, there's nothing like this anywhere, probably on the internet, and it's for, because it's probably traumatizing to the people listening, or you're reliving your trauma, or whatever. And if that's true, then you haven't really gotten rid of your PTSD now, have you? PTSD is just another word for you're traumatized and you didn't get over it. Okay? You saw your buddy's head get blown off in Iraq and you never got over it. You really secretly wanted to get your CO and strangle him. You buried that idea. You said you forgave him, but you still think about that every once in a while. I don't know if this pertains to anyone out there, but if it does... Well, how is it dissimilar from my situation? Right? Same thing. Having some red sage tea. And I got really no complaints. I mean, you know, and materially, roof over my head. Got a successful international film company that's, you know, poised to do some great things. I don't know if I'll be around to see them do it, but I mean, it's, you know, I set that up in my retirement years, and it's, I'm very pleased to see it going strong, and there's some battles like that now. There are some legal battles going on, and there's things that could sink us, but I don't share it because there's nothing anyone, no one can help me. If I sink, people probably just laugh at me. Which is fine. That would be the least of the problems. So I think in bringing this up about the hospital having to deal with that, I think it will maybe remove the block on writing, because I think I'm so angry that I just start wanting to stab the pages. I want to kill the computer. And I don't want to talk to anyone if they call me or I call them. Fuck all the protocols. I'm existing in some kind of eternal madness, spinning around. And I'm watching my fellow citizens. I think we're fellow humans, aren't we? Yes, your job is to abuse me, okay? But I still think we're fellow humans. To abuse anyone like anything different, you need to go abuse. Make sure you have a nice, homogenized, wonderful, obedient landscape of people. Now, I guess the call will be, hello, comrade, or whatever the new thing is with the communists. You know, they want it uniform. They want you uniform. See, I mean, You can look at me as being, you know, an individual, or you can look at me as being a prototype of what's coming for everybody, which is the way you should look at it. See, there's a reason to give this podcast out. It's not just a selfish, myopic, entanglement of my own, which I admit, dealing with your own entanglements on podcasts, I have found that to be very helpful, listening to other people's entanglements and other people's self-indulgencies and other people unburdening themselves of their abuse or their troubles. I found that a lot of what they say applies to me, or I feel a kinship. And when I feel kinship, I feel better. And then I pray for that person. Yeah, it actually gives me a little bit of hope. You know, that, you know, we're not alone here. And you think about the all the kids being trafficked and the war going on at the border, and soon they'll be just taking families out of houses and killing them all and moving in the Chinese, who will eventually be here ready to replace the Americans, including the immigrants. Or they will end up living in the labor camps. You got labor camps in Maui. Tell you, I'm not done with Maui yet. Anyway, so I've unburdened myself. Okay? That's what I've done today.
Good.
Because I've been carrying this thing, and I've got to free up some energy. And I think my recovery would go much better if I could get cured from this. You know, the one thing of feeling like, instead of I'm a victim, I'm unique is a better way to look at it. And that draws fire. But then I should understand that with compassion. Jesus was unique. John the Baptist was unique. Everybody around Jesus, all the biblical people were unique. Elijah was unique. And they were unique enough to become targets. Jeremiah was unique. We can go on and on.
You're definitely unique.
Right, but unique draws fire.
Yeah.
And then if you're sick and you're, you know, I mean, imagine you're standing there in the bathroom and your legs collapse, and that's it. It takes, you have to hire three guys to lift you up and then call 911 to go to the hospital, never knowing if you're ever going to walk again, and having nothing but assholes around you not giving you any encouragement whatsoever. You know, that's basically, you're just told to, you know what, your legs are gone, fuck it, and fuck you. Your legs are gone, deal with it. A lot of people have worse problems than that. Okay, I'm grateful my legs are gone, God. I'm saying that so I can, I can now, I'm forgiving everyone. Thank you for taking my legs, Lord. Thank you, I'm being forgiving, I'm being forgiven. I'm ready to forgive and put a bullet in everybody's head because I'm forgiving. I'm forgiving. I forgive you. Goodbye. Bam. I'm forgiving. Goodbye. Bam. Line them up. Line them up, brother. What's your sin? This is your come to Jesus moment. You're still going to die, but at least you can come to Jesus before you die. Oh, yeah. I said, in fact, director Guy Ritchie has taken it to an all new level in his Netflix series, The Gentleman, which is I highly recommend. I find it to be, anything with the royals and criminals working together, it to me is just, you know, from an entertainment point of view, it does take my mind off all this shit. But I tell you, it's a comedy, but it's a dark comedy, but it's brutal. And, I guess part of my own conditioning, my own problem is brutal. I see brutality. I see, you know, horror is not enough for me. There's a psycho by the lake. The kids all go to the lake for spring break. They're dancing and they're having fun and they're getting together on their boats and flying around, and the killer's on the loose. I used to love those movies, right? Now, if he could be clever in the way he kills people, it's fine. And then, of course, it's great when it's someone that you've seen but never expected, but who's part of the group. And that makes it all nice. And that formula always works. You know, and those are not hard to do. Those can be done for low budgets, and people love it. And people, they don't care if there's any names in it or not, or if you spent millions of dollars or not. They don't care. The story just sells. And it's because everyone can relate to going to the lake, to camping out, and there's something on the loose, killing everybody. And I know Tyler, he was in our... Oh, what happened to The quantum devil is, we're in a legal problem with it. Our distributor, you decided not to pay people, and we were one of those people, and so we had to force them to pull it off the all the platforms, and we are in a legal dispute. And I'm just innocently walking down the street. I've sold the film legitimately, and now this.
They ripped us off
right to our face. And they got the nerve to put their people in Berlin or anywhere else. And I just took everything I could do to try to do this civilized, but I feel like picking up the phone, calling the head of this company, and telling him, you know, you don't fucking do this to me, or I'm throwing you out the window.
You've done that before.
You know what? You know what I mean? I'm hiring an assassin or something. Because
I think we'll get to the bottom of this. Get it all
right, so it disappeared, all that, and we spent all this money on advertising and, you know, put it everywhere so people were aware of it, and it was like a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek Lovecraft look back to the, you know, nostalgic look back, you know, pleasant film, not you know, horrific, kind of like Girl Next, just a different, you know, both of those were very low budget.
A cautionary tale.
Yeah, but it was, you know, it was more of an entertainment, in my opinion. It was not supposed to be something heavy, but something people watch as entertainment, like it, and, you know, it's a you know, I'm glad we did it. It's got some unique, wonderful things in it by Larry's directing. Anyway, and I know he was devastated because of these criminal assholes. You know, who basically have no problem ripping you off, and this little stalemate they've caused, and the fact that we worked our asses off, and, you know, we had put money up and worked our asses off and made the film in Serbia, which was a big lift, and then to have somebody do that.
And it's already an award-winning film.
Yeah, it's won awards. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Our films...
We'll get it after.
Win awards, you know. We've got other irons in the fire. So it's, but I mean, I hate this kind of thing. But see, it's not going to give me PTSD because, you see, I expect this kind of shit, you know, this kind of street crap. And, you know, I expect criminality in business. You know what I mean? It's a common thing, and we just need, you know, obviously there's going to have to be a, you know, legal process that forces them to do the right thing, and there are laws that have to force them to do the right thing, like stick with a contract. And I don't like, you know, I could be very tough with all that, but that's not really what I'm talking about. In fact, it's just another. It's another pressure. I mean, I could wonder, are they trying to single me out because I'm the, you know, head of the company? Are they trying to? Yeah, you know, because I'm not even. It's not my film. It's Larry's film, and, you know, we've presented it, and I don't know. It's hard for me to believe. In fact, our senior producer said that in his, I don't know, 20 years of producing, he has never seen anything like this happen. So maybe it is personal. I don't know. But it's a good thing I don't go to them. Because had I been in Berlin and seen them there, I would have knocked their booth over. I would have called the girls whores, and I would have knocked their booth over, and I would have taken their material, and I would have just thrown it all over the auditorium. I'm really pissed. But see, when I'm pissed and I fight back, what happens? And then, of course, I forgive human nature. Of course, humans are going to just try to rip each other off. You know, basically everybody's against everybody else and everybody hates everybody, so it's just one big hate fest. But the spiritual side of it is really, you know, that's not what I want to do. You know, I want to be a man of peace. And the only way I can get to peace is to deal with this PTSD thing of what they did in the hospital. And I'm sure many dead people can't speak for how they got dead. The morgue, I can tell you right now, the morgue in these hospitals is full. They don't have room for more bodies. You know, they go in there with a little chest pain, and they're intubating people right and left. Don't think they are not back in the intubation game. Oh, yeah. So,
what really blows my mind is how all the truth is coming out, and yet the people are just going on, continuing with the abuse of.
And that's, they're going on with themselves being abused. And that's why they say the there's 3 million people caught, you know, are in this neighborhood, and they and then Biden goes, they deserve to die. Kill them all. And the reason he'll say that is because they've fallen into the victim mentality. And when you do that, then the predator is going to, you know, think, oh, that's an easy kill, cool. You know, I get 3 million of them. I don't believe that. Well, okay, can we drop this subject then?
Well, the good news is that was a good present that you got on your 70th birthday. Meeting up with this wonderful homeopathic doctor who recognized immediately, pretty much, that
I need help with that.
Need help with,
I mean, like, I'm about to go unhinged. I start thinking about it. I start yelling. I start cussing. I start talking about killing people. I mean, it's terrible. But I've never been unpeaceful. I've never been, you know, one to inflict violence on anyone.
Right. So this is.
Unless it was.
Yeah, it resonated with me so much when she was just a lovely person, and she was very intuitive, and I recognized immediately that that's huge, That's why I started crying.
I think you were down there every day at the hospital because you were protecting me.
Yep.
In a way. Anyway, it was just really touch and go. And my friend who works down there, if you hear this, you know, finally we've gotten to the truth.
Huge spiritual battle.
Finally we've gotten to the truth here. This is it from my perspective. And you do what you're going to do with it. But I tell you, nobody talks about this stuff, but if I don't talk about it, I'm going to be sick. I'm going to stay sick. And I've got to get it out of my system. I can't think about that evil witch down there with the anesthetic and the doctor and the surgery another second. I absolutely believe she's a murderer. And you know, how many people have died in that operating room? That'd be a really good.
I was planning on spending the night. I had, you know, after that big surgery that you had, I had got pajamas. I had arranged for Mandy to take care of Benson. And then she kicked me out. She wouldn't even let me stay in the room while he,
Well, it's coming to a head. This battle between good and evil on the earth is about to be externalized, and it's coming to a head. And I hope that, you know, then the Lord has his warriors.
Yeah.
And those warriors are going to be more reliable than the so-called phony tough that, you know, believe that just going into the armed forces is enough, just doing, you know, physical training or whatever is enough. It's not enough. Without that spiritual foundation, you can't do anything. Without that, I couldn't face what I'm facing now, which is this. And I have to let this hospital thing go. And I think whether that frees me up in the writing or not, I don't know. It's like three hospitalizations and a certain kind of person. In the first one, I had this, the nurses in the overnight between like, you know, 11 and 7 or whatever they are, you know, there were two of them were black nurses and they hated white men and told me so. So if I needed anything or I had to call, they would sit at the nurse's station and just laugh. I guess that's okay with you guys. I actually took one by the hand, not in a gentle way. I said, can't we be friends? Please. And the answer was no, we can't. I didn't ever deal with that. That was highly traumatizing. But may not have caused PTSD, but I mean, it was one of those situations where now looking back on it all, I see those two nurses, those two racist black nurses were there to do a job, you know, there to hurt white people and help people of color. And, you know, I happen to be a Christian white male. And then, you know, the gay guy with his, you know, flametronic way about him. Of course, it's encouraged in the hospital for them to be flaming as they can be. And, you know, there's no tone it down now. It's tone it up. And so basically I try to be friends and have an ally there. So he puts poison in my IV. I've got to find a way through this, folks. Should I just live in a cave forever? As far as like, you know, communication with people, write me. And they call me. It's all based on energy. If I have any energy at all, I will return a call. But if I don't, I don't. So that means I've had very little energy over the last, I don't know how long. But not enough to respond or to be functioning as a human, as a regular person. You know, I'm recovering from... I'm not going to keep repeating that. That I've decided that I'm going to recover. And I am going to give it my all in doing so. And I realize that most Christians haven't forgiven diddly squat. And I realize I just did a talk on forgiveness where I haven't forgiven anything. I'm a total hypocrite. I mean, not total, but I desire to forgive and walk with Jesus and forget the things, but you've got to forgive the soap. You've got to forgive the towel. You've got to forgive the bed sheets. You've got to forgive the food. You've got to forgive the rocks. You've got to forgive the sky. You've got to forgive the sun. It's too much. Never going to get free that way. There has to be just a tabula rasa slate. Boom, gone. The world is gone. And all that remains is Christ. So, you know, auto-forgive from auto-forget. But not just forget, but forever. Slate wiped clean. No past. The future bright. No memory of anything. With me, there's still, it's not, there are memories of when I was, you know, 35 and 40. And what I never dealt with was the shock and horror of being stalked and having it orchestrated by my own mother, who seemed to be in charge of millions of people in L.A. She could, you know, because there were people down the street, you know, spying with cameras and infrareds on us and, you know, cameras planted in the house and microphones and, you know, and messing with stuff and following and, you know, white vans driving by, flipping open the door like they tried to kidnap, you know, having to walk away from the curb because of the danger of kidnapping. I mean, I just no right. She has no right to do that. And admittedly, she's part of a giant collective. But the fact that she knew what was going on and she mocked it. She goes, "Oh, honey, you seem a little stressed." And I was broken. Destroyed. Yeah, I never wanted you to do films or anything in the arts anyway. You need to do something like what your father would approve of, or whatever it was, you know, all of that kind of lingo involved, you know, backed up by the gang stalking. And I mean the guy at the 76 station. I mean the guy at the shoe store. I mean the guy down at the, you know, down at Save-On. I mean the guy over in the whatever restaurant, the guy, you know, down at the beach, the guy in Maui, the guy in New York, the guy in Miami. And none of it. The only reason I kept all that quiet was because it scared me and I didn't want to be labeled nuts, which is what they try to do just even in the slightest amount of talk. It's like they have a, look, my name, Zeph Daniel, is completely suppressed. They don't debank you, someone like me. They don't debank me. They don't deplatform me. I don't exist. They won't say my name. They won't acknowledge that I exist. And that includes peers. Who is he? Never heard of him. And I think I've been around long enough to finally say, instead of PTSD, let me deal with that issue. I was the first one who was completely blotted out from reality. Not shadow banned. Blottoed. Not deplatformed. No need. Don't exist. So whatever you do, you do it invisibly. There's, and I said, that's fine with me because the people that need to hear this will hear it. The people who need to understand will understand. I'm not looking to build some giant platform with a million fuckers on it. You know, I am for patriotism, but if you tell them to go get their musket and fight, they're going to run and hide in Mexico. Yeah, good luck with that. It takes a lot of courage to face an army. Look what happened to the Ukrainians. Holy shit, they killed everybody there. They just obliterated them. So now that clears the way to moving American troops in there. Aren't you guys happy? They're going to have a draft, and the draft is going to be whether you like it or not. It's not going to be voluntary. They need people in NATO and all and everybody else on the ground going after Putin, you know. And the joke is that Putin's got a lot more nukes, a lot more advanced weaponry than anybody has, because he knew this day was coming. He knew he was being treated unfairly from the beginning. He's been lied about from the beginning. By, of course, Biden, the crime boss, hates Putin, who has the largest population of Christians in the world.
And he also protects other...
and he protects them. Yeah, he protects Christians. He may not be one, but I think if he protects Christians...
He seems like one to me.
Yeah, well, he seems very lucid. The thing is that when Tucker Carlson interviewed Putin, it was as much an education for people listening in and depropagandizing, de-mind-controlling people about Russia and about Putin... And getting them to, you know, it's kind of like, in a way, Nixon with China, although China had nefarious plans. I don't believe that Putin does have plans, except, you know, at this point, to hold on to what they have. I mean, I don't know. I just think the evilest regime in the world is, Biden, the UN, the WEF, you know, the WHO, all these coal-line globalists. To me, and which are all Satanists, and they're all, you know, child abusers. You know, so funny. I was watching a thing where the UN was in it. You know, the blue helmets, and you know they were doing good work. And I'm like, what? That you know, these are the biggest pedophiles in the world, and everybody knows it. I have witnesses who are on the plane with them from Haiti, and they knew that they took a bunch of children on those C-130s. To parts unknown, for fun and games. And we know, we have witnesses. I mean, God. In the book I'm writing, my character is ex-Special Ops. And both he and Trish, his wife, have combat experience and utilize it to the fullest extent possible. When it comes to dealing with these people. Because there's only one thing you can do with these people. You know what I mean? They're not going to get over it by putting them in jail. How did they become an abomination? There are some things that are just abominations. Hurting children is an abomination. My brother never recovered from being gaslit and gang-stalked. He died at 33. Francesca didn't make it much to 30.
She was 27.
She's in the 27 Club. And, you know, how many more needs there to be? Well, we might kill all of us. I'm just... I'm trying to forgive while I'm being killed! Can you do that? Forgive them, Father. They know not what they do. I can't wait to see you, Dad. But I'm not Jesus. And yes, it was completely unfair. And yes, Jesus didn't break. Jesus asked the Father to forgive them, for they know not what they do. Jesus earlier said, if you don't forgive, you're going to go to hell. Well, I guess hell is having something like a PTSD or having some kind of condition. I mean, I guess I've lived with that sort of conditioning since a teenager, you know, looking around every corner, you know, what's next? What will they try? You know, having this us and them mentality. But if I didn't do that, I would not be here. So if I just dropped it, hey, I'm free. Yeah, hey, I think I'll go down to the pizza place and see if I can deliver pizzas with my VW Bug when I'm 16. Yeah, that would be cool. And I could deliver pizzas. What would be the harm in that? What would be the harm in going back to school? Or think of all the things you could do. If it were in my power that if I forgave, then I'd have the power to go and do all those things I was kept from. Does it work like that? Or do other people have to open the gate? I know with God is, if God doesn't open the gate, you're not saved. I see lots of people think they're saved. Eventually they become totally perverted and they start justifying killing people by being saved. I'm saved and I need you to know, have you repented yet? Yes, I just repented. Well, God bless you. Here's to the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. And then they put a bullet in their head. You know, I mean, it's like, this is deliverance. Mm-hmm. Well, you can use the scriptures for good or bad, you know. Anyway, so that PTSD situation from the hospital, I guess that means in some way I appear to have let go a lot of the other stuff, that I worked my way through it. So that's good, but I need to deal with the hospital. I just haven't even begun. I've talked about it, but not in detail, not at length. Not the nitty-gritty of what happened. Not going all the way and feeling like they tried to kill me. Not saying that. Pulling up shy of that. And shy of that doesn't solve the problem. If it was the other thing. So I'll be dealing with it. If you notice a rapid recovery and me running around in the marathon, then you realize that there's a blessing in Jesus. There's a healing. And I believe that with all my heart. So, you guys, we'll see you next time around. Yeah.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, they don't want truth.
Yes.
You think they want truth?
All my friends do.
Huh. Waiting for the end of Yeah. Okay. And I.
Larry, think, you don't think.
Here's one that was prescient and was a few years ahead of its time.